Okay, can you hear me reasonably well at the back? Thank you. As Stephen says, I'm chair of the Society of Cartographers, but I think I'm here because I'm chair of the newly formed ICA Commission on Neocartography. But before we get to what on earth is neocartography, I'm going to just ask you to be involved in this presentation. I want you to tell me who said that. Anyone in the audience know? Great philosopher? Where's Stephen Feldman when you need him? Okay, this is the philosopher of this parish, Mr. Arsene Wenger. one of the most quotable football managers, I think you'll find. But I want you to latch on to the thought, ideas. It's a circle of ideas we're going through and we're going to come back to. So, what do I mean by neocartography? It's not a very attractive word, but it kind of does what it needs to do. It's the new cartography. And I'm not going to read all that out to you, but it's where I'm coming from about what the cartography of today is. So the guys even in this room may not be necessarily traditional cartographers. They may be doing things in a different way. Maybe using open data. Maybe using open source tools. And my contention is that there's a blurring between map producers and users. And sometimes there's another horrible word, pro-user, which I don't like, but some people use it to say that you're both producing and using. And the point is that the neocartography is both about how the data is brought together and how it's output. So it's not just about new ways of presenting maps, it's the new environment that we're working in. The URL at the bottom there is basically a blog that I use for the ICA commission. The presentation will be there tomorrow. All the slides have got the reference to where they come from. You're welcome to go to it if you want to go back to things later on. So I'm talking about the crowd and the cloud. This is a working definition of crowdsourcing. I looked at several different sources, and in fact Wikipedia was the one that worked for me. So that's it, it's sourcing traditionally performed tasks, but by the community rather than by individuals. And if you really want to know what I'm, this is a bit of self-publicity, but at the ICA conference in Paris I gave a paper that is explaining my views on why crowdsourcing is changing the geodata landscape, and the reference to it, I say, will be there if you want to go to there. So, crowdsourcing. Okay, anyone in the room know who this guy is? Any offers? The clues in the background? Okay, it's John Harrison. Does that help you at all? Okay. In the early days, there was an attempt, it's not crowdsourcing as you might think of it now, but the government were actually looking for ways to deal with it, how the ships know where they are. And it's the whole thing about the longitude. And they established a prize for people to come together and give the answers. And John Harrison was one of several people who submitted things to that and won a very small amount of money in that field. Crowdsourced maps. I think of the OpenStreetMap product as one of the best examples of what crowdsourcing can do. And I would just say, if you want to talk to me about OpenStreetMap, come and find me on the Society of Cartographers stand. I'll be wearing this rather natty surveyor's vest. Come and talk to us. That's an illustration of the area around the Emirates Stadium where we are now. And there's, as you can see, varying levels of information. Some people have mapped some of the settlement detail, but there's other areas where it's not done. You, all of you, could go out and add to that map. And if you can want to talk to me about that aspect, how it might happen, do feel free to come and talk to me about it. As I say, I think it's one of the best examples of, there's now, one day this week, 500,000 people registered for the OpenStreetMap site and are doing things to produce maps. And if you look at almost anywhere, it's a global project that started in London, not very far from here, but it's now a global project and it's a fantastic resource. And one of the things that makes me say that it's a fantastic resource is what happened in Haiti in 2010 when there was an earthquake. The guys who went out there to do aid work didn't have any decent mapping. And in a spirit of collaboration, GOI, I think it was, released a freshly flown set of aerial imagery immediately into the public domain. And it meant that you and I sat in my house at home, used the imagery within OpenStreetMap, and from the imagery you could tell the red and yellow crosses are collapsed buildings. The little tents are temporary camps. You could tell where these things were from the imagery. You could map them, and the map data was released instantly, and it was really useful for the people working in the field. And there was a really nice comment back from someone on the research and search and rescue team about that availability. I just think that's a fantastic example of the value of crowdsourcing and the value of that particular set of data. But what I want to talk to you about is other things that are happening in this field, and just acknowledge the fact that there's different things happening. This is a map of the Thailand flood crisis. It's an information map, and again it's been sourced from the crowd. The stuff that you can see is the agglomeration of SMS texts, tweet responses, and all sorts of things on these different levels of information. It's powered by a tool that an organisation called Ushahidi has developed, and it's a hosted service, which will be relevant when we come to the second part of this presentation. And if you want to know more about it, crowdmap.com is the place to go. I would point out, I'm not necessarily showing examples of good cartographic design, and you'll see one in a minute which probably proves that point. But there's been other attempts to crowdsource. Have you ever tried to work out what the data availability is for mobiles? Not easy information to come by. The BBC attempted to do it, and this is one of the resulting maps. And they coordinated over 44,000 people's responses to what the level of data was. But one of the problems it shows is data voids. You can immediately see that, you know, I happen to be the area that I live in North London, there isn't a full set of information. And it's one of the obvious downsides to crowdsourced information, which you need to acknowledge. The next example is SurveyMapper. It's a tool that's been developed from the CASA guys at UCL. This one, again, difficult information to come by, broadband speeds. And they've attempted to do it for East Anglia. And again, you can see data voids around the edges where the information is not available. But it's not restricted to traditional tools like that. There's now the ability to crowdsource aerial imagery. This is grassrootsmapping.org, which is a conglomeration that's bringing together developments. And people are trying to do somewhere in here balloon and kite mapping for aerial imagery, which can then be rectified. And the illustration at the bottom is some research guys from Goldsmiths University London doing that very thing. And it's quite possible to use those kind of technologies to produce usable and up-to-date information for your mapping purposes. You know it's getting serious when Microsoft start coming in. Okay, this is a paper I found the other day, and I'm not going to read all that stuff out to you, but it's them saying it's the stuff that we can do to actually make crowdsourcing more effective, and they've got a tool called CrowdSynth, which they're proposing is going to help to do that stuff. If you want to read about it, I'd say go to the reference, it'll be available on the blog later on. But it's Microsoft saying, okay, we've got to acknowledge this stuff. It's all happening, we've got to get involved in it. And if you as individuals really want to get involved in it, there's a research project going on at Nottingham University, and there's an invitation for January to go and get involved in it. And the significant thing is those two words. It's looking at, can the National Mapping Organisation actually have some benefit from this kind of technologies and this kind of work? So again, if you're interested, try and get involved in being involved in that activity. 2 days ago, the government released the Treasury statement, and there was a couple of interesting things, particularly about the Open Data Institute. I don't know if you picked up on that, but it's something that will be in the so-called Silicon Roundabout area. Tim Berners-Lee and Nigel Shadbolt will be leading on that. Quite what it's going to produce, I'm not sure, but there's also other stuff about the Met Office Audit Survey and other data. It's yet to be seen how that will be available and how it will be released. But Jonathan Raper immediately yesterday was starting to analyse what was going on with this stuff. So just moving on, the cloud. What do I mean by cloud mapping? Okay, it could be that, but that's just a graphic because I quite liked it. the ash cloud over Iceland. Okay, a classic example of available data usefully mapped but rather poorly designed. But if you want to see a really good example, go to the ITO World website and look at the animation they did over time of the availability of airspace and the void there was when there was no activity over Northern Europe, and then when it came back in afterwards. It's a really fantastic example. New cartography doesn't have to be static. It could be dynamic, it could be animated, and that's really part of my point. Very simple terms, cloud computing means you give the power, or you take the power from the cloud, from someone else, they do all the crunch work, you have a client that just acts into it. Don't need to explain it any more than that, I don't think, but that's what I'm talking about in the second part. Google think they're in there doing it, I think they're not. They're badging Google Earth Builder as something that's actually developing things in the cloud. I don't think it particularly is, although the Google Earth and Google Maps stuff is available to you in that way. I just don't think it's actually moving things on particularly greatly. But the examples I'm going to give you, Tile Draw is a really good example from Stayman Design. Stayman Design, if you're familiar with it, it's an American company. If you go to the London 2012 website, they designed the rather gaudy maps on that fit that kind of crazy logo that the London Olympics have got. But the Tile Draw stuff is really interesting for what you can do with that. You can do different layers, you can do flash applications in modest maps, you can do quite a lot of things in Tile Draw, and I think it's quite a good advance. And also there's a development of GIS type capability. This is giscloud.com, London-based organization, and it's got analytical tools to a certain level. So that particular map has got 300,000 polygons in it, which are all active and linkable. That particular one has got the data brought out to it. And it's developed in the cloud. All you need is the interface to work with it. Something you might want to have a look at. And again, like Microsoft on the other stuff, when Esri start getting involved, you know it's starting to get serious. And this is again Jack Dangermond in April talking about the developments at Esri that were going on. And this is just a screenshot from the ArcGIS online tool, but the important thing is what's happening here. Easy online discovery, access, visualization, and dissemination of geospatial information. The actual work is done for you in the cloud, and there's some examples from the website here, but I've got a live example that my colleague Ken Field supplied me, which is just an online one, and you can do things like the base map is changeable. They've designed quite nice fade-out maps to use in the backgrounds for you to use, and it's quite a good example of a different technology, but the work is happening on the ArcGIS online crowd platform. So I can't leave you without three things. One's a good Christmas present. If you want to know about the fantastic story about the longitude, Davos Abell's book is really good. If you want justification for, I think crowdsourcing is an important and effective tool, James Sirulniki's book is good. And I can't not mention the best book about OpenStreetMap, which is written by somebody who I know quite well. So just to finish then, anyone on that one? Quotation. Back to ideas. Who said, using ideas as my maps? Come on. Dylan. Bob Dylan, yeah? Yeah? It's also the one that goes on about, I was older then, I'm younger than that now, which I've never quite understood where he's coming from. But and finally, there was a really good crowdsourced farewell to the ideas man behind Apple. This is basically a set of tweets compiled into a graphic image of Steve Jobs, who I admire at one level. What I don't admire is his attempt, if it was him, to suggest that Apple could actually take schematics as a trademarkable idea, which they were trying to do quite recently. So that's me, that's how you can contact me. The URL at the bottom is the one where the presentation will be available very shortly. You can contact me in email and Twitter. And that's really all I want to say to you about this particular subject. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve. I did show Steve the card a bit earlier, but to allow time for questions. So there is time for some questions if you have any for Steve.
That's good.
Yeah. Okay, if anyone's got any at the end, if we move on to the next speaker. Thank you, Steve.